You're listening to a podcast from oxinabox.co.uk with Catherine McAllister.
Hello, I am here with Federica Gigante at the Ashmolean to talk about her. She's the curator of an amazing new exhibition called From Istanbul to Oxford, which is all about the origins of coffee drinking in England. Quite a niche subject. How did it come about?
Coffee is something everyone can relate to. It's one of the most common activities that we do every day in an everyday life. It's something everyone can relate to. And as I wanted to explain something about the relationship between the Middle East, the Islamic world, and Turkish Ottoman culture and Europe, it struck me that focusing on how indebted we are to Turkish Ottoman culture in our coffee drinking habits was really something everyone would find fascinating and would be able to relate to.
It's extraordinary that Oxford played such a pivotal part. You would have thought perhaps London or somewhere, but this is where the first coffee house opened.
Indeed, it was in Oxford that the first coffee house in Britain opened in about 1651. But it was also the place where coffee was first recorded to be drunk in Balliol College, probably in about 1637. And we have to remember that Oxford was at the time really the place for Orientalists to come. The first chair of Arabic studies had just been endowed in Oxford. Orientalists and people who had travelled around the Middle East to collect manuscripts and books, which eventually ended up at the Bodleian Library, were all gravitating around Oxford. And so it was really the place where I think people were ready for such an introduction as a coffee house. It indeed soon after spread to London. It was only in 1652 that the first coffee house then opened in London. And by about the early 1700s, there were approximately 500 to 600 coffee houses in London.
Wow. So why were they so popular, do you think? I mean, until then, presumably people had met in pubs and
largely
homes.
Indeed. Coffee houses were extremely popular both back in Turkey and in Istanbul, and then in Europe and England in particular, for pretty much the same reasons. They defied social divisions. They allowed people to meet and talk in a very sort of horizontal environment with no hierarchies. So this is the first thing to keep in mind. The other one is that suddenly people were sober. There was a place where to meet during the day without getting drunk and be able to make some sense and discuss. So in Turkey, coffee houses had become places where people would go to play chess and backgammon and read books or listen to books. Of course, literacy was quite low, so books or poetry was often read aloud. And of course, to discuss and talk. And the same happened really in England, where coffee houses became the places for people to go and read the latest news. We have to remember that it coincided exactly with the introduction of broadsheets, which were pieces of paper printed on one side only with the latest news, really the precursors of newspapers. And so suddenly it became a place for people to meet, discuss and share ideas. Of course, they became revolutionary places as well in the eyes of the authorities. And both in Turkey and in England, the powers and the Sultan or the King tried to shut them down. Until in both cases, they did discover that actually it was probably easier to send a spy in to listen to what people were saying rather than trying to silence public opinion to start with.
So in Oxford, they spread fairly swiftly as well, didn't they?
They did.
Oxford
being a much smaller place, we have, of course, fewer coffee houses than in a big city such as London. They did spread pretty quickly. The main area was the High Street, unsurprisingly, and partly Broad Street. There were only a handful of coffee houses in the less popular, more peripheral sort of St. George Street, St. Giles area, which you need to remember was very much on the outskirts of the city by then.
And colleges had their favourites, is that true?
It is absolutely true. people from Christchurch would go only to one coffee house and never mingle with those from Queen's College, who would go to another coffee house. And what is extraordinary is that students started to endow libraries and books to these coffee houses, which became little centres for study and discussion. There are records of books in Oxford in the latter part of the 17th century that could only be found in a particular coffee house, not in a college library, or indeed at the Bodleian Library.
So we've talked about the fact that they were sort of centres of intrigue, which is quite exciting, but judging by the strength of the coffee that they were drinking, it was quite different to how we drink it now. Probably quite animated conversations, would you think?
Well, absolutely. There were also records of arguments, problems. Some coffee houses were allowed to sell alcohol in Oxford at the time, which didn't go down very well with those who were not allowed to sell alcohol, which slightly defeats the point.
Yeah. And because it was just after the Civil War, you've got some wonderful displays of what the of coffee tokens in this exhibition, which were used because there was very little small change, which is absolutely fascinating, isn't it?
Yes. After the Civil War, during the Commonwealth period, one of the main problems was the shortage of small currency. And of course, small businesses needed small currency to keep going. And they decided to overcome this problem by minting their own coins, or tokens. They were never really allowed to do so, but we have to keep in mind that coinage was one of the main prerogatives of the king, and the king did not really exist at the time. He had been executed. And so I think there was more of a sort of a feeling of freedom in this respect. So many, many tokens were minted, and they would normally have the name of the owner and the image of what the sign of their business looked like. And we need to remember that we are in a society where literacy was quite low. Of course, Oxford would have been a slight exception, but all businesses, pubs and coffee houses would have had their sign outside their shop with a very clearly recognisable image, and people would have called those businesses with what they saw. And this is partly why one of the most common names for coffee houses was the Turk's Head, because the signs showed the head of a Turk. And these Turk's Head then appeared on these coffee tokens so that people could recognise them. And the exhibition shows a selection of them, both from Oxford and from London. And for me, they are by far the most fascinating items. They are the one item that was produced in England at the time, showing its clear connection with the Ottoman Empire and with Turkey. This is also the reason why we have pubs nowadays, which are called the Turk's Head. They're all old coffee houses that would initially have borne the name of a sultan, being Murat, Sultan Murat, or Sultan Suleiman, to connect with the origin of coffee.
It's fascinating, isn't it? There was also a lot of intellectual progress made within these coffee houses, with all the students meeting, almost like an early student union, meeting to discuss ideas. And tell me about some of the societies, perhaps, that came from that.
Well, one of the most important outcomes of people meeting in coffee houses in Oxford, in particular, was really the Royal Society. The Royal Society, which was founded in London, started with a group of people discussing scientific experiments and advances in a coffee house. And among the things they discussed, there was indeed coffee and the properties of coffee, which was highly debated and discussed at the time, when they thought coffee would cure pretty much every sort of illness, which we know unfortunately is not the case today. A product like the Royal Society, of which Newton then was president, and really added much to the modern world and current knowledge of science.
It's amazing what they did think it did cure everything from miscarriages to colds to stomach aches to... it was the answer to all our problems, coffee.
It was. To those who were in favour of coffee, their propaganda really centred around these miraculous properties. And there is a banner in the exhibition which was printed in 1660 and has a handwritten note saying that it was hung near Queen's College in Oxon in 1660, so probably Queen's Lane Coffee House, I should guess. And it would have been there on the wall explaining all the virtues of coffee, and there were dropsy, gout, miscarriage, as you said, any sort of stomach problems, any sort of eye soreness, flatulence, and so on and so forth.
The health values were such that there were many pharmacies that had sort of coffee house attached to the pharmacies. Is that the case?
Yes. Some of the earliest coffee houses in Oxford were opened by apothecaries who had their sort of pharmacies where they would sell products to cure people, and then they decided to open or dedicate a room in their house, in their premises, to a coffee shop to serve coffee. And this is, I think, is a very clear indication of how coffee was was seen at the beginning as a sort of medicinal drink that could cure many illnesses and be used for all sorts of problems.
As we know, it sadly went out of fashion before it came back into fashion again more recently. What happened to all the coffee houses?
Tea was introduced soon after coffee, in about 10 years from the introduction of coffee, and then chocolate as well. And so when we get into the 1670s, we see that, and we see it mainly through the coffee tokens that I mentioned earlier, that coffee houses sold tea as well. And this coincided with the British getting to India and the spreading of the colonies, which of course meant it was a lot easier to import tea than it was to import coffee. Of course, this is not the sole reason for that, and scholars have debated for years about why Britain then shifted more towards tea, but it's certainly true that from an economic viewpoint and a trading viewpoint, it became a lot easier to import tea, which also meant prices went down and people naturally followed towards the tea drinking than the coffee drinking.
Such a fascinating exhibition. We highly recommend everybody coming to see it. You must be very pleased with how it's progressed.
I am extremely pleased about it, particularly because this is a fairly small show that has not been advertised much by the museum, and yet has attracted the interest of so many media outlets, and people have been writing to me saying that they came to see it. And I think this comes largely from the fact that everyone can relate to coffee, and that very few people knew about this story. And so, in a way, it changes the perception of something we do every day and we are so attached to.
So when does the exhibition end, just so that we all get there in time?
The exhibition is open until the 15th of March, but I don't think it's a very good idea to procrastinate coming if you come sooner rather than later. I do that all the time, going very last minute to shows, and then if something comes in the way, I'll never be able to make it.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a podcast from oxinabox.co.uk with Catherine McAllister. Read more online at oxinabox.co.uk.